You know, imagination is a wonderful thing. It creates possibilities. It's really the first step in innovation. Now, you're leaders, so your job is to invent the organization of the future, the kind of organization that's a supplier of choice to its customers within the company and beyond, and the kind of organization that's an employer of choice to its staff, attracting top talent without necessarily paying top dollar, and inspiring that talent to new levels of performance and to working in concert. So let's use our imaginations today as a leadership tool to envision that future state organization that we leaders could create. Come with me on a thought experiment, a journey of the mind, where we'll think out of the box about how organizations should work. Together, let's imagine what it feels like to work in this ideal organization. First, imagine that the group within the company that you manage isn't just a function that's expected to play roles in processes or be responsible for a set of tasks. No, instead, you're running a small business, a business within a business. And it's all yours. And your challenge is to make a success of it. You know that so many common practices in traditional bureaucratic organizations will cause your business to fail. First on the list is resting on your laurels because you think internal customers have to work with you. Well, you might have a monopoly. That is, internal customers are forced to do business with you, or you might not. But if you do, you know the surest way to lose a monopoly is to behave as a monopolist, eh? So in either case, you know your job, whether or not you have a monopoly internally. So in either case, you know your job is to earn your customers' business. Remember, customers being other groups within the company or externally. There are many behaviors that perhaps seemed right in a bureaucratic world, but undermine great partnerships with your internal customers. First being thinking you have a monopoly. Another being looking after the best interest of the company. That's a way of saying, I know what's best for the company. I know what's best for you. It is the opposite of internal customer focus. It's disrespectful to your internal customers who have their jobs to do and is unlikely to build great partnerships that will lead to strategic value. Of course, if you're shared services, another behavior that's going to get you in trouble is believing that one size fits all, that you do enterprise policies or solutions rather than tailor to the unique needs of each of your internal customers. Think about it. What do customers have in common? It's all the boring bureaucratic stuff that gets in the way of strategy. But when it comes to strategy, each of the groups within departments within a company has a unique role in strategy, and you've got to focus on what's unique about them to add strategic value. You could lose relationships, that is, lose internal market share by trying to make your customers' decisions for them. That is not respecting that they have a business to run and they have to control their factors of production, internal services included. So they should get to choose what they do and don't buy from you. Another way you can damage relationships is by judging your customers or auditing your customers, claiming to have the power to decide what they can and can't do. So, what's the alternative? What does it take to earn your internal customers' business? Basically, three things: relationships plus value plus performance. These are the things that make us the supplier of choice to our customers within the enterprise and beyond. Now, in this organization of the future, you love these challenges because you have pride in your business. You know it's your name on the door. Those are your products and services and your customers. You're motivated by a sense of purpose, that is, serving your customers with products and service that create value for them. I don't mean the purpose of the enterprise as a whole. That's a good thing too, but I mean your local purpose. You see that you're there to deliver value to others. Another key part of your motivation is that you're empowered. You're empowered. It's your business to run your own way today and to guide your business into the future with innovation and sound business strategies. But wait, you say, you have a boss and you're part of an organization. So what does empowerment really mean? It means simply this: authorities and accountabilities match. That is the definition of empowerment. If ever you separate authority from accountability, now I'll make this sound black and white. I know there are shades of gray, but black and white to make a point. If ever you separate authority from accountability, then the person with authority becomes an unconstrained tyrant, not accountable for the implications of their decisions. Meanwhile, the person with accountabilities and not concomitant authorities becomes a helpless victim. Can't get the job done, and a scapegoat when things go wrong. It can't work. This is a fundamental principle of organizational design. But here in this organization, you feel empowered. You know that the success of your business is totally up to you. That's your accountability. And to accompany that accountability, you have all the authorities you need to get the job done. You're managed by results. Nobody tells you how to do your job or manages your tasks. You're managed by your deliverables. And you have the freedom to do your job in the best way that you know how. Specifically, you have three kinds of authorities: the right to decide how you do your job, the resources you need to do it, that means time, money, assets, others' support, and the information you need, like a clear definition of expected results, any constraints, et cetera. Of course, your business within business, your group, is one of many in your enterprise, all carefully defined as businesses within the business. Each is well focused on a specialty because specialization maximizes performance. Domains, that is boundaries, are clearly documented, not just a few words in a box. So everyone knows exactly where to go to buy what, to buy whatever they need. You know, when I say buy, I'm not necessarily talking about money changing hands. I don't mean chargebacks. I'm talking figuratively, the business within a business paradigm. So everybody has clear domains, and taken together, all these domains are comprehensive. They add up to all of the specialties, competencies, all of the lines of business the enterprise needs now and into the future. And that's because the organization is carefully designed. There are no overlaps, which would cause internal friction. Where you have an overlap, you're putting two managers in competition with one another. And don't we have enough competition outside? Perhaps most important, you work well with your peers on teams. In fact, these are high-performing teams. That's not because of team building or carefully engineered processes, which are rigid and not flexible. You're not an assembly line. No, teamwork is fluid, flexible, dynamic. Teams form laterally. Just like in the real world, if you need help, you go directly to other groups to subcontract for their products and services, for whatever help you need. You don't have to go up and down the hierarchy to form teams. And that's because we have an explicit method of team formation. Team formation. It's part of project intake or starting a project. It's a meta process, a process for defining processes, not a rigid assembly line type process. It's a method for defining processes in the context of the specific and unique needs of each project. And because of this, the organization is agile. It's able to flexibly recombine its talents to meet the unique needs of any project, recombinant organization. There's another reason you love working here. You remember a time when so much more was expected of you than you had resources to deliver. But now, a critical part of your quality of life and the job satisfaction of your staff comes from the fact that expectations match resources. Supply and demand are in balance. This is because in this organization, we've applied market economics to the design of our resource governance processes. Okay, think about it. You don't go to the grocery store and give them money for rent, electricity, compensation costs, etc. Of course not. You give them money for food, yes? Well, the same is true of internal departments. Nobody gives you budget. Nobody gives you money to pay your costs. The only reason you get a budget is because the enterprise wants to buy your products and services. That's internal market economics. Specifically, in our visionary organization, we've redesigned two key resource governance processes: our annual business and budget planning process, and a business-driven demand management or project intake and prioritization process. Let's look at each in turn. First, when you prepare a budget each year, you don't just project your spending for the coming year. Picture a spreadsheet where the columns represent your typical cost factors like compensation, travel, vendor services, capital expenditures, both OPEX and CAPEX, and the rows represent the projects and services you intend to deliver. Okay, that should be pretty familiar, well and good. The mistake that so many organizations make is they total the columns and submit a budget for compensation, travel, vendor services, capital, that sort of thing. Now, what do you expect executives to do with that? It's, hey, my friend, you really don't need all that travel in your budget, do you? You're just begging for micromanagement, and it's not a constructive conversation to have with senior executives. Well, instead of just totaling the columns, let's also total the rows and present the cost of the projects and services that the enterprise might buy from you in the coming year. Now you can have a discussion of what the organization will get at various levels of funding, what they would get if they give you just a little bit more budget than anticipated. Now you can make budget decisions based on the investment opportunities at hand, not just last year plus or minus a percentage. This is called investment-based budgeting. It's a business planning and budgeting method. That's a key part of internal market economics. By the way, what you're going to find is your internal customers are defending your budget. Oh, don't cut that service. I need it. And that's exactly the kind of dialogue you want to have. Is this about, it should be about business need, not your spending. Okay, that's one key part. The other key part is once the year begins, maybe the budget anticipated this list of projects based on conditions at that point in time. But once the year begins, that priority stack is obsolete. Things change. The world is changing quickly. But once the year begins, you've got to keep expectations within the bounds of your resources. And look at it through the lens of market economics, and you'll see the answer. You'll see how to do this. Remember, nobody gives you money to pay your costs. You don't go to the grocery store and give them money for rent, electricity, checkout clerk, right? So similarly, the reason you got the budget is to buy your products and services. Consider it prepaid revenues. Prepaid revenues, money put on deposit with you at the beginning of the year so that the enterprise can buy from you your products and services throughout the year. Again, I'm not talking about chargebacks. This is conventional budget comes to you, but you think of it in a different way. You think of it as a checkbook put on deposit with you that belongs to your internal customers. And they use that checkbook to buy products and services throughout the year. In this organization, we've established a governance process where your internal customers set priorities. They decide what checks to write and what they will and won't buy from you. That way, if things change mid-year, we're not sticking to a plan we formulated during the budget cycle months and months ago. We can dynamically adjust. On the slide, you see your budget flows into checkbooks, some of which you control, but most of which are intended to benefit your internal clients. So there, they appoint a purser, a committee perhaps, to decide what checks to write. And when they write a check, that is when they buy one of your products or services, you get revenues, which, because we've calculated the cost carefully, those revenues cover your actual costs. That's internal market economics at work. And on top of all this, or perhaps I should say as a foundation for all this, you love working here because you have a culture of integrity and teamwork and empowerment, of customer focus, entrepreneurship, quality, judicious risk-taking, and more. Your culture is defined not just by a high-level list of values. In fact, you'd probably be annoyed if top management told you how to feel or what to value. Now, here in this visionary organization, your culture is explicitly defined in a far-reaching set of behavioral principles. You know, we do this. Clear, actionable principles of behavior. You see, values drive behaviors, but the converse is also true. Behaviors drive values. It's a cycle. And so the only interesting question is where to break the cycle. Those who preach a values-based approach to culture, those are the ones who tell you that it takes a generation to change culture. Well, no, it doesn't. Look at learning theory, addiction therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy. Right down the line, they talk about a behavioral approach. And while as a leader, it's not clear you have the right to tell people what to value or how to feel, you can certainly say, look, if you want to succeed around here, here's how we behave. So thanks to this behavioral approach, you know exactly what to do. You can model the culture to set an example for your staff. You can teach it and you can measure it. And through this behavioral approach, your organization has been able to see dramatic change in culture in less than a year. This entrepreneurial way of working is reinforced by metrics that incentivize the right behaviors. Not metrics that reward silos and empire building, like the old Hay Point system where your job with your status, your political clout, your ability to get things done, in fact, your title and your paycheck all depend on how big your budget is and how many people you manage. What are you going to do with a metric like that? Well, I don't want to team with others. I need the headcount myself. It's insidious and perverse. Now, the metrics here are designed around the business within a business paradigm. These are not simplistic metrics like OKRs, objectives and key results that look like just a list of project delivery. And that's because you're responsible for much more than delivering today's projects. You're responsible for running a business and innovating and building relationships, for being a successful entrepreneur. So the metrics are comprehensive. If the only thing you're measured on is project delivery, you're going to suboptimize and neglect the rest of your duties. Here in this visionary organization, the metrics focus on all of the things you need to do to run a successful business within a business, all the things you need to do as an internal entrepreneur, metrics of both short-term results and long-term sustainability. Bottom line is you're part of an organization that performs, and it feels great to be both empowered as an entrepreneur and part of a winning team. So tell me, folks, does this sound like a utopia that's out of reach? Well, the truth is, you can create such an organization through an organizational transformation. By transformation, I don't mean things like digital business or any other current business strategies. Until your organization is at its peak performance, you'd best not raise expectations of heroics with regard to digital business or business strategy. And I did not say technology transformation, cloud, hyperconverged, big data analytics, IoT. No, that's not what transformation is. Once you get the organization working at its peak performance, the entrepreneurs who offer those services, well, they'll both continually innovate and they'll propose funding for major innovation initiatives. That's a product of the machine, not the design of the machine. Organization transformation means deliberately designing the organizational ecosystem in which we work. the organizational operating model. That organizational ecosystem sends signals to people that guide them day by day. And the most important job of a leader is not to formulate strategies or lead strategic projects. It's more than inspiring your subordinates or influencing peers. Great leaders design organizational ecosystems that send the right signals. And then you can empower people, and by the rules of the game, they'll naturally do the right things. So how can you reprogram those signals? Well, first, let's ask, where are those signals coming from? In the course of my 3 or 4 decades of studying this, I've found those signals coming from the organizational ecosystem really are coming out of 5 distinct organizational systems. And taken together, these 5 explain how things get done. They explain how things work. Beyond that, they explain the overall level of performance and the character of an organization. When I say organizational operating model or organizational ecosystem, I mean these 5 things. These are all attributes of the design of the organization, not the people within it. And they all have to come together to engender a high-performing organization. There are 3 big systems and 2 little ones. The 3 big ones are structure, internal economy, and culture. The 2 little ones, methods and tools, and metrics and rewards. Let's go over these. Structure, the word structure means 2 things, organization chart and that teamwork process I described, the workflows that cut across the organization. You really can't separate them. Any change in one leads to a change in the other. Any competent practitioner of structure should design both concomitantly. The organization chart is there to ensure that the enterprise has all of the competencies, in my world, all of the lines of business that it needs now and into the future. And then the workflow is a process by which those competencies are put together for projects and services. Internal economy, 2. These are the resource governance processes. That includes planning, I described investment-based budgeting, as well as that dynamic governance process that allows us to adjust priorities with agility as the year proceeds, as things change. Of course, it also includes accounting. That's after the fact. Where were we yesterday? That's the least transformational of the bunch. And culture is the 3rd of the big 3, how we work around here, that system of values and behaviors. The minor 2, these are used late in a transformation strategy for institutionalizing the new paradigm and for fine-tuning, that is for continuous improvement. One is methods, tools, best practices. Those of you in the IT world will know about ITIL or Agile and the scalable agile frameworks. Those are methods and tools or best practices. And finally, metrics and rewards. Metrics, this is not only performance management, the metrics that you hear about in your performance review at the end of each year, but also the dashboards that you get that allow you to make decisions and drive your business within business in real time. And rewards, well, rewards up and down, consequences up and down. That's what makes the metrics of interest. Now, in each, all of these 5 systems are programmable. These are things you can explicitly design. And in fact, in each of these 5 organizational systems, there's a science. There are firm principles and frameworks that guide your design. For example, in structure, once you know those principles, you can look at any organization chart and predict who's fighting with whom, who's not achieving their objectives, and who has ulcers. It's that clear, it's that tested, it's solid science in each of the 5. And for each of these 5 systems, there are tested and participative processes of change. Change management built on participation of your leadership team and ultimately all your staff. So those are the tools available to you to drive a transformation toward that visionary business within a business, empowered organization. So, in practical terms, how do we get from here to there? Let's look at a case example. My friend Preston Simons. He provides some of the best examples because he's been working alongside me to understand and to implement this model for many decades. He's really a transformational leader. Preston was CIO of a Fortune 80 conglomerate, but then he wanted to get closer to healthcare, to patients. So he left and joined a healthcare system, a little one. He had a budget of 180 million. He had 450 staff in his IT business within a business. Now, this case study happens to come from a healthcare company, but that really doesn't make any difference. The people are people. Human nature is the same wherever you go. There's nothing in the model I'm talking about that is specific to healthcare. And it also happens to be an IT department, but again, there is nothing in the model that is specific to IT. Whether we're talking about the enterprise as a whole or a department within it, the principles are the same and the processes of change are the same. So when Preston was brought in, he inherited rather a mess. Clients weren't happy with IT. Poor communication, lack of strategic relevance, mistrust, strained relationships, decentralization. Staff were demotivated, burnt out, disengaged, quiet quitting was the norm, turnover was high. Operations were far from stable. There were unplanned outages, poor communications, unresponsive customer service, no capacity planning, infrastructure investment planning, no sourcing strategy. And engineering, that is the design and support of new solutions, adequate at best. Project estimates were poor, there were no technology standards, and there was little in the way of innovation. His organization was taking unnecessary risks with regard to safety, including cybersecurity. They weren't PCI compliant and regulatory compliance was an issue. They were slow to address risks and didn't really have a risk management process. And they had poor links to federal agencies with regard to cybersecurity. Supply and demand were way out of balance. That is, way more was expected of Preston's IT department than they could possibly deliver. And clients didn't know what they were getting for their money. Hey, we gave you all that money, Preston. What value did we get for it? Seems like you cost too much. And they certainly were not in control of IT priorities. Meanwhile, staff were overworked. And in the futile attempt to satisfy unmitigated demand, they cut corners on quality. They had no time for training, no time for innovation, no time for process improvements and planning. Well, as I said, Preston inherited quite a mess. Here's what he did. When he first arrived, he did two things. First, of course, being new, he met people and listened. You know, the first 90 days, listening up, down, and sideways. His chain of command, up to the board, his staff, his peers, and even some external vendors. And he asked two questions. He said, what's wrong with my organization? What problems do I need to fix? But also he asked, what would you consider a world-class organization? In his case, IT organization. What are your dreams? In parallel to his listening, his round of listening and meeting people, he crafted his vision of the end state organization. Now, by vision, I don't mean some cute sentence or to be a world-class supplier of IT products and services to help the company make lots of money. No, yawn, boring, not going to make any difference. But what he did was craft a detailed description of how things would work a few years down the road at the end of the transformation process. It took, as I recall, 12 or 15 pages to describe in detail that end state organization. Here's a table of contents of his vision, the chapters in the vision. Sophia, can you read the bullets on this slide? Not out loud, but can you see them? I'm not sure that Zoom is working right.
Yeah, we can see them.
Yeah, we can see.
Okay, because off in the gallery, I don't see them. Good. So this is a table of contents. These were the chapters. And picture each of these being a page or two of description. How does the organization develop relationships with its, in his case, internal customers? What is he doing to ensure the strategic use of IT, not just the boring keep the lights on? How do they keep the lights on? How do they treat operational services? This is all a vision of the end state a few years down the road. How do they go about engineering and architecture, the projects they do? Security risk and business continuity, how they formulate policies, how they formulate plans, what is their approach to compliance, how they go about resource governance, that is establishing budget and then managing it during the year, how they define the structure and attributes of their culture. And remember, in each of these chapters, Preston wrote a page or two of statements about how the organization would work. I'll give you a few examples. In the case of client and IT relationships, he talked about how IT will treat clients as customers, not helpless victims or unruly children that need to be controlled, but how they would respect their internal customers' decisions about the assets they wish to buy, such as IT applications. He talked about how they made it easy to access IT services and how they communicate openly and proactively with their customers. As far as the strategic use of IT, think digital business. He talked about how IT builds clients' awareness of the strategic potential of technology. That's an education mission. And how IT proactively helps clients analyze their strategies and their operational imperatives, and add value, how technology can add value to their business thinking. How the organization would proactively identify high payoff strategic opportunities, such as digital business. Well, after he crafted the vision, he engaged his leadership team. They studied it and they edited it. And they talked about each and every one of those statements in each and every one of those chapters until they got to consensus. By consensus, my definition of consensus is teach and support. Everybody understood it well enough to teach it. And whether or not it was their first choice, they were willing to support the decision of their peers. So they went through that vision statement, looked at every statement, looked at potential edits, adds, changes, deletes, and worked and discussed until they got to consensus on the vision. So now Preston had a leadership team that had a shared vision of the end state. That alone is powerful. Next, they assessed the gaps. Not just current problems that they had to fix, and there were plenty, but gaps against their vision. And as you'd expect, there were a lot of gaps. So note that this is driven by the vision. This is not about firefighting. It's not about reacting to the pressures of the day. It was an assessment of the vision, a much higher bar. After that, well, they did identify a few fires that needed fighting right away. We call those triage items. But for the most part, for most of the gaps, they did root cause analysis. That is, why would our good people create this gap? And they found that all their gaps were rooted in those five organizational systems. That convinced them that they needed to redesign their organizational ecosystem. And beyond that, the leadership team was able to explain to their staff and their internal customers why change was needed and what problems would be solved as they addressed each of those organizational systems. And the final step was they sorted the root causes, that is the five organizational systems, into their transformation roadmap. a 3 to 5 year plan to build that very different kind of organization. Here's what their strategy looked like. Now, this varies by organization and the needs. This was theirs. I'm just giving this to you as an example. There's no reason why this would apply to you. They started out with those triage items, the fires that they had to fight right away. And in parallel, Preston recruited some leaders, that some leadership talent that was just plain missing from the organization he inherited. Now, they talked a lot about structure first or internal economy first. Structure first would deliver immediate and visible benefits to their clients. But they were so under the gun with expectations so far exceeding resources that they had no chance of succeeding. So they started work on internal economy. Their first major transformational step was investment-based budgeting, so that people would understand what could be expected of the department for a given level of funding. And by the way, in that first year of implementing investment-based budgeting, in a year where everybody was being asked to take a small cut, their budget went up 30% because people realized that they had been severely underinvesting in IT all these years. And the return on investment of additional budget was significant. And because the business was defending Preston's budget. Once that was done, the next step in the transformation roadmap was the demand management process, that dynamic priority setting throughout the year. Once that initiative was underway, they started a comprehensive approach to structure. Not just moving boxes around intact, but thinking ground up about all of the lines of business that need to be somewhere, and then sorting those lines of business into an organization chart based on those scientific principles. Next on his agenda was benchmarking to prove that they were the best deal in town, that their costs were under control, while in parallel working on culture, which is like lubricating the machine they had just designed. And late in the strategy, metrics, both dashboards and performance metrics. Now, all of this went into a document and a slide deck, which they socialized, which they shared with all staff and with their peers and with his chain of command all the way up to the board. You know, the response was all we'd hoped for. By sharing the vision, he inspired both clients and staff. Clients said, wow, yeah, that's beyond my expectations. That's the kind of organization I want to do business with. And his staff said, wow, yeah, that would be fantastic. That's the kind of organization I want to work for. By sharing the gaps, he built trust. People said, oh, Preston, you heard me. Yeah. You understand. In fact, you're tougher on yourself than I would be. And you're not defensive. So I can trust you. And yes, I see now we really need significant change. By talking about the root cause analysis, gave people faith. This wasn't going to be, you know, that game whack-a-mole where you fix one problem and another one pops up alongside. No, he gave people faith that he was addressing the real problems, the root causes, once and for all. So they understood why it would take time. It bought them time. And of course, they saw the strategy, step-by-step plan, and that built trust and faith and support. And it got people to understand that this can take years. And although my biggest concern won't be treated until a year or two down the road, Preston, I get it. I understand you're addressing root causes. I will be patient. So he bought himself time. They started work on their triage items. And in parallel, they worked on the first step of their strategy, which was recruit those key leaders. So we formed a few new boxes to house them and brought in some new competencies. We moved groups around a little bit, but we moved groups intact because we didn't want to break anything. That just gave Preston the ability to recruit some missing talent. Next step, investment-based budgeting. The benefits of that alone were significant. People understood the value they were getting from IT for a given level of funding. It was a fact-based budget decision, not arbitrary numbers like last year, plus or minus a percentage. It led to realistic expectations, and that alone contributed to the culture. people started thinking like business within a business, accountable for deliverables. The demand management process, this is where clients decide what checks to write, that significantly improved IT's alignment with the rest of the business. It kept supply and demand in balance throughout the years as new things came up. It built trust through transparency and enhanced relationships. It enhanced clients' commitments to IT projects because they had to defend their projects to the check writing committee. And that in turn led to more benefits realization. Clients worked to get the benefits from those investments. Again, we saw progress on culture, on customer focus, and entrepreneurship. Next, the comprehensive structure. Every box designed as a business within a business. But there was a lot more to this than drawing boxes. The full leadership team worked on clear boundaries, a paragraph or two that described the balance of their business within a business. And they carefully crafted, not just in terms of what they deliver today, but on into the future. And they worked on their cross-boundary teamwork process. And in this process came to further understand their jobs as entrepreneurs. Now, structure, this had a huge impact on performance and on employee engagement. The rest of the strategy was about institutionalizing this very different operating model and fine-tuning it over time. So, what if you're thinking that you have some systemic problems to address? How can you get started? Well, a real visionary leader in the right circumstances would start with the transformation planning process that I described, the one that Preston did. The listening, the vision, the gap analysis, the root cause analysis, and the road mapping. But I understand the situation on the ground might not lend itself to doing something quite so ambitious. Not everybody has that amazing opportunity to be a transformational leader. So in that case, you might just dig right into one obvious organizational system, the one you know you need to fix right away. That would generally be one of the big three: structure, internal economy, or culture. Dig right into that, and then we'll see whatever comes next. So that's not publicizing a vision, not the root cause analysis, not the multi-year roadmap, but at least you can make some progress. And whatever progress you make, if you have in your head a vision of where you're going, and if you're using fundamental principles, you won't be zigzagging or going at right angles. Each change along the way will add up to a coherent organizational operating model. Well, if you don't feel ready even for either of those, at a minimum, you can read about the vision and the transformation process and think about how it applies to your challenges and talk to your leadership team about it. Read, think, discuss the vision, and then act in small ways. And small changes that you make in the near term will be consistent with that long-term direction. Well, no matter what situation you're in, think about leadership. Think about who you are as a leader. Look, there are four types of leaders in the world. The cost cutters, you know, come in, slash and burn, save money, and then they get ejected 2 or 3 years later because they've made so many enemies. I know there's a place for them that may be needed. It's not something I'd want to do. Then there's the maintainer. Hey, you know, the guy before you was pretty good. So what we want you to do is just keep on doing what they were doing, you know, continuous improvement, small changes on the margin. Number three, the project manager. I'm here to implement digital business, or I'm here to implement ERP or whatever. Well, Preston would say, I've got people for that. That's not leadership. The fourth is the transformational leader. Whether you go the full-scale vision and transformation road mapping process, or system by system, or even small change by more small change, if you're a visionary, if you're driven by a vision, and if you're transformational, you'll have tremendous impact on people's lives. I hope by envisioning that ideal organization and by knowing that the mechanics are there for you, I hope that some of you will be inspired to become truly transformational leaders. And for you, for those of you who will be transformational leaders, I'd like to make an offer. you guys, you willing to try, you're open to learning, you deserve all the support in the world. My capstone book, 35 years of work on this kind of organizations, business within a business organization, it describes that vision of an entrepreneurial empowered organization in detail. And it describes the mechanics, the principles of design in each of the five systems. And it even describes participative change processes to implement those designs. So for those of you who are really interested in exploring this, exploring the vision and those processes, I hope you'll take advantage of the book. It's available on Amazon. And for you special people, I'd be pleased to schedule a call if you'd like to chat. Maybe I can help from afar. Please, please email me. I'd like to meet you.